true superpower I actually developed during my PhD is the fact that I can go from knowing nothing about a particular subject area, a complicated one, to become one of the leading researcher in that area. That to me is the true superpower. So the PhD is a means, not an end. It's not the fact that I can do this particular thing. It's the fact that now I have the confidence and also the knowledge of doing this all over again, either in another scientific research area or something that has nothing to do with science. But at least to me, now look back, that's the real gift of my PhD.
Hi, I'm very excited for today's episode. Offer unfortunately can't join us, but I'm here with Evan Bai. Hi, Evan.
Hi, Elena. Thank you for having me.
Oh, sure, my pleasure. So I came across Evan's post on LinkedIn where he talked about his new career in interior design, which I thought was beautiful and was showcasing his latest project. But he's actually a PhD scientist with a PhD from Yale in genetics and a senior principal research scientist at Vertex. So he sort of continued in parallel on these very two different yet exciting career paths, and I wanted to explore those further. So hi, Evan. Very excited to have you here. Could you introduce yourself a little bit, maybe more cohesively than I did?
No, that was great. Alina, like you said, so my journey go a little bit way back. So I actually grew up in China, and then I came to the US for undergraduate study, where I studied both chemistry and biology. And I was really captivated by biological research. I did research all throughout my undergrad. And then afterwards, I decided to pursue a PhD degree. That's when I decided to go to Yale and studied cancer genomics with a wonderful advisor, Dr. Mara Gunnell. And after that, I really wanted to better understand how I can apply the genomic techniques I was learning to solve healthcare and human disease related questions more directly to impact patients. That's when I turned my interest towards the industry. So during the last year of my PhD, I did a summer internship at Gilead Sciences, where I really enjoyed it. So that gave me confidence that, okay, this is something I think I can do as a career. So after finishing my PhD, I joined Vertex Pharmaceuticals in Boston as a scientist. And since then, I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is my 7th year at Vertex. And now I lead a team of computational biologists to apply genetics and genomics to advance our therapeutic programs, to really try to come up with novel and transformative medicines to help patients with severe diseases. And throughout my journey at Vertex, really, I love science. I've always enjoyed science. But even since I was very little, I also was strongly interested in the arts. I remember starting when I was 4 years old, I started practicing a traditional Chinese art form, the traditional Chinese calligraphy. And I practiced that all throughout high school. And I won many national awards in China. So that was really something I really loved.
Steve Jobs did calligraphy, right?
Oh, really? Maybe like American or English calligraphy?
He did definitely something with artistic writing, but I'm not exactly
I remember
sure.
It because I remember a story about how he chose the fonts for...
Exactly, yeah. That's why he knew how to do the iPhone so nicely, yeah. Or like the whole Mac.
Interesting, yes. I just haven't thought of it. But I kind of going back, I kind of always had that interest in both arts and sciences since an early age. I used to think that I would go and actually study architecture, but somehow I followed my scientific path and joined scientific research instead. But that kind of spark and interest for art and design was always there. I know even early on doing my research that one of the things that set me apart a little bit from my peers. Like, I was terrible at a lot of different things, but one thing I was able to stand out is in making beautiful figures and presentations.
Oh, that's what I wanted to ask. Do you have like special, photography, like images or that you managed to get from cells or something?
I wasn't a good bench scientist, but definitely as a computational scientist, I was very particular and meticulous about making figures that are both illustrative and very intuitive in showing the underlying complex data and results, as well as visually pleasing to look at. So there's always kind of a sense of design within me that I know I wanted to explore further. So fast forward, coming back to the original point, having been at Vertex for 7 years now, and throughout as a gay Asian immigrant, I've gone through my journey of having work visa and then finally having my green card. So that allowed me to explore a second career on top of what I'm already doing. So last year, my husband and I bought our first condo, and I had an amazing time decorating it exactly how we wanted. So I thought, you know what, I'm gonna take a leap of faith. So at the beginning of this year, I founded Hanwen Interiors, which is an interior decorating company, not interior design yet, but hopefully one day I'll get my certificate in that. But especially focusing on modern Asian inspired designs, which is very authentic to me.
Yeah. And this is in parallel to your work at Vertex, right?
It is. Yeah. So I would say Vertex definitely my main job. And this, I tell people that I'm a scientist by day and interior decorator by night. So this is definitely something I do in the evenings and on the weekends. And it's been a wonderful creative outlet for me, for sure.
Yeah. So amazing career. I think it, being just one of those is incredible, but managing to do both is really fantastic. I want to go back and ask, so you said you did an internship at Gilead and then that made you sure of your sort of path towards Vertex. When you started your PhD or during your PhD, have you thought of sort of going outside of academia, or did you think you'll be a PI? Sort of how that worked?
Yeah, no, thinking way back, when I started my PhD, certainly similar to many of my peers, I started thinking that I would continue down the academic path, like all the way till becoming a professor, hopefully one day, and continuing on doing research. Because doing research was something I loved and still continue to be something I love, which is why I very much enjoy my work at Vertex. But I would say somehow after the first and second year of my PhD, I still enjoy doing research, but somehow kind of the academic career starting to seem a little less appealing to me. Just seeing the postdocs and the junior PIs around me, kind of how much they have to completely immerse themselves into the day-to-day and applying for grants, constantly thinking about the work and the pressure of publish or perish. I think that made me wonder if I actually, and really most importantly, seeing the conviction they had in academic research, like I saw that, I was like, wow, I don't think I believe in this. Like, let's say they believe in it 200%. I think maybe I believed it, let's say 90%. That definitely made me waver a little bit in terms of my conviction to the field of academic research. Secondly, let's be real, as a first generation immigrants, where all my family and everybody in my life are still back in China, being the only person here in a new country, I still also wanted to figure out for myself, what's the kind of life, what's the lifestyle I want in the future, in the long run. And looking at the in terms of financial returns and being the academic career, I wasn't sure if that was sufficient for me for the lifestyle I wanted. I'm not saying I want exorbitant amount of money, but I still wanted to have a have a home, have a physical house, and doesn't have to worry about putting food on the table. Because again, I'm the only person in my entire family that's in this country right now. So that was a real practical solution. I would rather say a practical factor as well, that I'm not, I'm not ashamed to admit, like,
no,
that was
no,
a real factor. Either, yeah.
Definitely not for this crowd, but also I think it's great that you could explore those options during your PhD. I guess Yale are doing a good job in that, because a lot of the times you're so focused. And as you say, like, you need to immerse yourself in order to succeed to do a PhD well, that you're not really open to those options. And it seems like you were, sort of, I don't know, mature enough or, had enough sort of observation of the world around you, both in the academia and outside, to make those explorations in order to come to these conclusions.
No, that's very kind of you. I think you might be giving me too much credit. I will say it's a combination of maybe the only thing I would say is that I was honest with myself of how much I loved academic research. I love it, but maybe not to the extent when I saw the postdocs and the research scientists and the PIs around me. Right. And secondly, I was honest of myself in terms of the stability, especially the financial stability I would like for myself in my life. And on top of that, I am truly grateful to Yale and to my PhD advisor and mentor, especially. My mentor, Dr. Murat Günal, so he is a Turkish, first-generation Turkish immigrant and to the U.S. too. So he started out at Yale as a resident in neurosurgery. And then he, being interested in academic research, then without a PhD degree, started doing amazing academic research. So now he's still a practicing neurosurgeon, head of the department, and runs a world-class lab. And the only reason he pursued that is because he followed his passion. The reason I'm kind of rambling is because I remember in my third year of my PhD, during my first committee meeting after choosing a lab with my boss before the meeting, we're talking about my career plans, for example. And I said, I come in, I was like, oh, okay, I'll probably just, finish and then do a postdoc and then figure out what to go with there, because that's something everyone does. And that's something back then, at least, that everyone assumed someone should do after their PhD. It is my PI who told me that, no, you should think about what your true passion is and what you actually want to do after PhD. That entirely surprised me. I wasn't expecting him to be asking me that question so genuinely and really wanting me to think for myself what's best and what I truly wanted to do. And because of that one question, really, it made me start to consider seriously and explore seriously all the options out there in order to figure out where my true passion lies. And for that, amongst many other reasons, I'm forever grateful to him as a mentor. Yeah.
Yeah, kudos to him. Not many mentors do that, which is
really great. Yeah, even nowadays I don't take it for granted at all. Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah, it actually, one of the reasons we're doing the podcast is that not only for PhD and postdocs to listen and to sort of think about other options, but also for mentors that are, even if they have their own path figured out in academia, they should be aware to other options and allow their students, as you said, sort of to explore and to think about other options and what's right for them. Because you're right, academic research is very, very demanding and you need to be sure that this is exactly what you want to do.
It's not an easy path. So hats off. And I have so much respect for everybody who are so dedicated to that path.
Yeah. So you've been for 7 years at Vertex. Can you tell a bit more about that? Sort of how is that different to your PhD work? How is that similar?
Yeah. So when I started as an entry-level PhD scientist, I was definitely also applying my hands-on computational analysis skills that I learned and developed during my PhD, as well as my critical thinking skill, so that I continue to pick up new computational and technical skills. And I was applying them to new disease areas, new experiments, and new studies that I haven't worked on before. So that was really exciting to me as a scientist, because I continue to hone my technical skills and now just solving different biological questions. So in that regard, it felt like a natural continuation of PhD. It didn't feel so different. I was still really fully immersed in scientific research every day. What was really different, even from the very beginning, I'm sure that theme has come up a lot on this podcast series, is that in industry, it is so much more collaborative. Right. I'm not the sole driver or the main driver of my project. Even if I am, let's say, the only computational scientist doing the data analysis, interpretation, etc., I work with at least 5, if not 10 other scientists to together, before we even get the data, to design an experiment, to make sure that it answers the question we really need to answer, and then conduct the experiment together so that we understand all the conditions in order to support the downstream data analysis. And when I actually touch the data and do analysis, I wasn't just going down a rabbit hole of doing whatever I want. There's clear expectations, clearly laid out scientific questions I need to pursue, and a clear timeline of when I need to deliver what. And how I deliver it also has to be a clear presentation where it's not just for other computational scientists. It's really for scientists who are experts in their own field, who may not be an expert in computational biology. So all of that was definitely a whole nother league compared to how things are in my PhD. And I had a relatively collaborative PhD thesis project. So that was a true learning experience. Not to mention, most importantly, just how much, because of how collaborative drug discovery is, how collaborative industry is, being able to work effectively with everybody requires really strong soft skills, being able to connect with folks interpersonally, being able to communicate our ideas in a conceptual way so that we're not bogged down into details. That was something, frankly, took me a while to develop, because I truly wish that I focused a bit more on my soft skills during my PhD training than I actually did.
Did you get any dedicated training for that in Vertex? Like, did they think about those aspects?
They now look back, they definitely had, for example, some training here and there on, for example, presentation skills. Mm-hmm. But really, most of the learning came from the day-to-day, being in the meetings with people who are really good at expressing their ideas in a way that people can understand. Mm-hmm. People who are very good at asking open-ended questions to encourage each other to share their ideas in order to come up with the best solution in the end. So it's really by observing from each other and getting really constructive feedback from peers, from my managers, and from other collaborators that helped me kind of find my own voice over the years. But it did took me a while, I have to admit. Yeah,
I guess it's a bit different from the sort of lab meetings where everyone are sort of trying to find the default and sort of trying to figure out, like, what is the question or sort of what's the next experiment that you probably have not thought about.
And we still have, even in Vertex, in our Department of Computational Sciences, we still have lab meeting style presentations where it's just computational scientists present to other computational scientists, where we really learn from what each other does. But even so, because everybody works on such different projects, you still have to take a step back, really explain the big picture. And everybody approaches it a lot more constructively, maybe than sometimes in academia, because frankly, being nice isn't something that's as emphasized.
Wow, it sounds great. It sounds really fun. I think it also demonstrates that, you know, in a lot of times you would say, like, you transitioned from academia to industry. But actually, you just moved on to in the same path that sort of, it doesn't feel like a detour, at least to Vertex.
Yeah, no, yeah. I definitely saw how it stretched me and made me grow as a person and as a scientist. But at the same time, I never felt like the things I did, the skills I developed during my PhD was for nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. This is great. So you said that designing your own apartment drove you to sort of think about interior decorations more seriously. But, you know, I've designed a few houses, probably not as nice as yours, but they're okay.
That's wonderful.
But it never really occurred to me to make a career out of it. What made you think that this is something that you want to devote so much time to?
That's an excellent question. That one I also asked myself and asked my friends and my husband a lot before I started the business. Like, how do you decide, or when do you decide if something is more than a hobby or more than a passion? It's something that one should actually dedicate their entire career, or if not, at least a second career to. I think for me, I still don't know if I made the right decision, by the way, but so far I haven't regretted it, but maybe.
How many projects have you had since you started?
I've had, not including my own house, 3 projects, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah. Thank you. But really where it came down is that I did a lot of self-reflection. Like, my whole life, I had a strong interest for interiors and buildings. Like, I thought I was going to pursue an undergraduate study in architecture, but mm-hmm. by happenstance, that didn't happen. And I know even as I started working at Vertex and was able to make a decent living in terms of when I think about what to spend money on, as a luxury, it wasn't like fancy cars or super nice clothes or Michelin star meals. It is that I dream about living in a beautiful house. So I think there's something about that I always gravitated toward. And in doing the decoration of my own home, where it started is that I really wanted to find the type of aesthetic that bridges the kind of the traditional Asian sensibility with mm-hmm. the modern Western sensibility, because that's what me and my husband represent, and that's our aesthetic. However, it was really hard for me to find such aesthetics readily available in terms of the designs that's out there. And it's even harder to find specific, for example, furniture pieces in mm-hmm. America, where we live, that evokes that Asian inspired sensibility. So I did a lot of research and a lot of thoughts into it. And in the end, I still love our condo a lot. And I think I have a quite unique eye because of that. Mm-hmm. And then in talking with a lot of friends and family, they also see that. So that may maybe realize by doing the research and by getting genuine feedback from folks that maybe there's something unique that I can bring to the table from the areas of interior decoration. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to give it a try. Because another thing is that a passion like interior design, like, I don't have the money to keep buying houses. The only way for me to keep doing it is to do it for someone else. So that's another practical reason for why I decided to take a leap of faith.
Interesting. So, you know, there's a lot of logistics goes into business, sort of, I don't know, marketing, I don't know, financial management, talking to clients, getting contracts. How did you find that sort of transition for this one? I think it is quite a transition from being, you know, a researcher in a biotech company or a pharmaceutical company.
Absolutely. There has been a huge learning journey and continues to be. I will say, but that was one aspect of learning that I am embracing. Like, when I decided to start the company, I told myself there are two reasons. The first is that I want it to be a creative outlet for me. And secondly, is because I want to learn about the business part of what it's like, what it takes to be a founder, a business owner. And what I'm not trying to do, because of the luxury or the fortunate position I am in now, like what I'm not having this business be is my primary source of income. Like I'm not counting on it to bring home dinner, for example. So that allows me the space to learn. And I will say that I constantly be impressed that I think the system, I felt really supported by the system. For example, when I had to like start the company, I was doing Googling, at least in the states of Massachusetts, there's a very clearly laid out series of websites from the government about how to start a company. And similarly, the Department of Taxation have very well laid out instructions on how to file taxes and stuff. So that learning process has been good. But I will say that it's still a constant wrestle for me between working in the business as a decorator, like you said, actually doing the designing, the partnering with the client, which is what makes me want to start the business to begin with, versus spending the time and energy to work on the business, such as, you know, from things like building a website to engage or maintaining a social media presence so that people know I'm out here, to the logistics of the accounting and stuff. It's still a constant balance. And there are aspects of it I do because I have to. And there are aspects of things that I do because that's why I am doing this. So it's still a balance for sure. Yeah.
I wonder, do you find yourself apply research skills? Like, I don't know, thinking, I don't know. I guess I have a few examples in my mind, but I wanted to hear from you.
Sure. No, I think to my surprise, I was able to, there were definitely some transferable skills from my scientific research to my design work on a couple of levels. First of all, in a concrete ways, when we're designing or decorating a space, it not only have to be beautiful, but also have to be functional. So that sometimes means solving real life challenges. How do you fit enough functions into a space? For example, how do you sit six people in a space that's quite tight? So there are some scientific problem solving that happens all the time. And not only that, even if to make something look beautiful, how do you choose pieces that strike the balance between aesthetics, but also pricing, and also, especially nowadays, lead time that it takes for that piece to arrive. And so there's always constant trade-offs and problem solving involved that I do feel like because of the complex scientific questions I need to solve every day at work, I can apply that analytical thinking to a design and a decorating project as well, so that to balance the pursuit of beauty to the functionality aspect of the space that we need to decorate. And so that's like maybe more specific way, but taking a step back, I would say what my scientific training and career have really helped me is it has given me both the confidence as well as the humility as a decorator. Confidence being that the fact that I could go from someone who knew nothing about a scientific topic to someone who did a PhD research on it, and then now, and also continue to develop scientists in my field, that gives me a lot of confidence that even if it's something that I've never done before, I can go from knowing nothing about it through thinking through studying, through researching, to become knowledgeable in it. So having that confidence that I know how to learn and I know how to solve a problem has definitely been very helpful. At the same time, definitely there's the humility aspect too. Like in the field of science, there's always someone who knows better than you on a particular topic. And that's a field that I've trained my entire life on. Whereas for interior decorating, I have no formal trainings at all. So bring that humility into my work now so that I know that, you know, I gotta be constantly learning both from my clients as well as from other designers and decorators out there. So that mindset has also really helped me.
Interesting. So how is the work with clients is like? Like, do they, do do they care that you have a PhD or you're coming from a different background, or do they just love the way you designed your apartment, which is, by the way, beautiful? If no one,
thank you. That's a, I honestly, I need to ask them that. I like a lot, two of my clients so far, two out of three of my clients have been either extended family members or friends. So like through referral, essentially through my network. So it's people who know me who are kindly, kind enough to place their trust in my hands with their homes. And there so far has only been one client that essentially is a stranger, like who reached out and was connected, and we have been working very nicely together. Like, I honestly don't know why they choose me. I think fundamentally, they at least connect with my aesthetic. So they like the overall work product, which is what I'm putting out there, and they decide to work with me. And I actually don't know how much of the fact that I'm a scientist or have another job affected their decision making, but that's an interesting point. I'll let you know in maybe a few years when there have been more data points.
Yeah, I'd love to know. I think, you know, I came across all kinds of professionals that are doing that have a PhD background, and their sort of actual job doesn't really require it. Like, for example, I had a lactation nurse that was incredible, and she had a PhD. And obviously you can be a lactation nurse without having a PhD in molecular biology, which I think she had. But she was this sort of very intelligent and sort of composed woman. And I keep going back to sort of thinking about her and thinking sort of has sort of having the PhD has sort of shaped her, you know, her approach and attitude, and or is just it's something there in the background and it's not relevant, and I'll never know, because as you said, no, just one point.
I love that. And over the years I've reflected on that too, like early on, especially right after I finished my PhD, I definitely had this perception that my superpower through my scientific PhD training is the fact that now I know how to do analysis X, Y, and Z. Now I'm an expert in this paper I published in journal XYZ. But now many years later, maybe I look back, at least to me, the true superpower I actually developed during my PhD is the fact that I can go from knowing nothing about a particular subject area, a complicated one, to become one of the leading researcher in that area. That to me is the true superpower. So the PhD is a means, not an end. It's not the fact that I can do this particular thing. It's the fact that now I have the confidence and also the knowledge of doing this all over again, either in another scientific research area or something that has nothing to do with science. But at least to me now, look back, that's the real gift of my PhD.
Yeah, you summarized it really nicely. And I agree. I think that's one of the things we learn is to sort of tackle new problems and formulate them and not to give up until you solve them one way or the other. And I think it's wonderful that we can apply those skills to other things like podcasts. Or interior
absolutely
decoration.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So you mentioned a few times that you're gay and married to a spouse. I wanted to ask, a lot of the times I sort of wonder, because there's a lot of, like, for example, being a woman, that's something that's sort of highlighted and people keep arguing about sort of, does it matter that you're a woman, and should you be sort of, I don't know, somehow promoted more because, or do you suffer from not being promoted because, or I wonder how it is like for you. Have you felt that plays any role in your career development, both Vertex and otherwise, or not really?
That's a great question. Maybe I start like where I'm standing now. I think I'm really going from someone who's so closeted to now, you know, like you said, happily married and being very open about who I am. I think it's more about the fact that I'm just comfortable in my own skin. I know who I am, and I'm not ashamed of it, or rather, on the contrary, I'm very proud of it. Whether people connect with that fact that I'm gay or not, that doesn't matter. The fact mm-hmm. to me is that I'm not trying to hide it. That's part of who I am. That's part of me that in the past I would hide. Whereas now I'm happy to lead with it. Whatever however people want to interpret it, that's not for me. Like that's them. That's on them. That's not on me. Like right. all I'm trying to do is just put my authentic self in front of them. So that's, I think, maybe number one from a personal perspective. And secondly, maybe as the career journey where I have been and where I continue to be on, I will say that being an LGBT advocate and an advocate of diversity, inclusion, and equity in general is something I'm highly passionate about. I have been a volunteer co-chair of our Vertex Pride Employee Resource Group, which mm-hmm. supports LGBTQ employees and allies for the last 3 years. So we have over 400 members in our network, which is about 10% of the company. And we constantly advocate both to build stronger bonds within the Pride network at work, including through mentoring programs, as well as educate the entire company on the challenges the community continue to face and celebrate on achievements by bringing in really prominent speakers in the fields, for example, as well as make structural changes such as advocating successfully for the company to establish all gender bathrooms across our buildings and enabling people to include their pronouns in their email signatures and Zoom names, as well as even outside of the walls of Vertex, providing financial sponsorships as a company to nonprofit organizations in the LGBTQ fields. So that's something I'm just really passionate about. And I think I've been fortunate that being at a place at Vertex where leadership and everybody has been highly supportive of this work, because everyone truly believes in the mission of that diversity and inclusion and equity lifts everybody up, not just right. underserved groups. And that's something I bring into my business too. So one of the reason or one of the principles I carry when I founded Hellman Interiors is that I want to give back to the LGBTQ community. So I pledge to donate 10% of my design fees to nonprofits serving the community. And this year I've donated more than $2,000 from my business, and that's something I'll continue to do going forward. I think for me personally, that's something that I feel strongly about, and I'm proud to be an advocate, and I'm proud to lead with it. Mm-hmm. Whatever happens, whether that helps me because some people recognize and connect with who I am, or that deters some people, frankly, I don't care. Because at the end of the day, I prefer interacting with people who really connect with who I am. So I think that's where I am at now in my life. But this is a recent development in the last few years. So you didn't come out in your PhD? Oh, I did, yes. But I wasn't, let's say, out to anybody, for example. Mm-hmm. Being more vocal about LGBTQ advocacy work is mm-hmm. something I really started at Vertex, I would say.
Great. Well, great for Vertex for support all of this.
Yes.
You know, it's a lot of the times like you think about like society or company, and it's really people, but we tend to sort of put those big labels and ask for accountability, and sometimes people step up to it and sometimes not. So
yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's all in the end, it's all because of people. It's about the people you have and whether you can bring out the best out of the people you have.
Exactly. And I loved how you say that you lead with it. A parallel, not the same example as the, for example, I always mentioned that I have kids during an interview.
Yeah,
yeah, as you say, like some, it will deter some people, but I don't really want to be there if that deters them. And I think it's a great advice. I'm sure it's not an easy advice for everyone to lead with something like that, but I think if they can, then it's worth it, because then you you feel more comfortable where you are.
Yeah, I think personally, that has been a very positive change in my life. But I also fully understand, especially for some identities, such as being LGBTQ people, not everyone has the luxury of being open to everybody. But I definitely feel fortunate being where I am now today.
Fantastic. That's good. We usually have a question towards the end where we talk about myths. And I think, as you mentioned, that's many PhD students start this route thinking about a very specific route, and very rarely their PIs sort of deter them or sort of get them to think otherwise. But we have those very specific mindsets about what is industry like, what is academia like, what are careers in those areas look like. And I think we mentioned a lot of, or at least some of the myths that people usually have that are not real or not correct about either industry or academia. But I wanted to ask you if you have sort of something else that you would like to mention that you were surprised about, or you were sort of thinking in one way at some point and then figured out that it's really sure. not like that at the end.
Or sure, absolutely. And that's a great question to end on to get people to really reevaluate some of the assumptions they perhaps have been carrying. Maybe I'll touch on one thing, which is something I hear a lot about, and I've had myself when I was exploring whether I want to leave academia to pursue scientific research in the industry instead. That is the fact that there's more scientific freedom in academia. Mm-hmm. That is true from the perspective of in academia, you have more flexibility to really follow your pure sense of curiosity of researching on whatever topic, go down whatever serendipitous findings you come across, as long as you can get money to fund it, mm-hmm. and as long as that leads to an interesting scientific paper. And that's wonderful. That's very noble to really pursue knowledge and chase the next frontier because of curiosity, because that's what's in the unknown. That's really noble and that's really amazing. But the myth is that there's less scientific freedom in industry. I would say there is still plenty of scientific freedom, but it's in a different way. Meaning in the industry, yes, you're right. I can just go off, decide tomorrow to study something totally random. My job and all of our job is to develop new medicines to treat patients. So everything we do have to be getting us to a little bit closer to that goal. In that regard, yes, that means the universe we're operating within is a little smaller. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's really going from double infinity to maybe single infinity, because mm-hmm. even within this universe, there's still many different ways to solve a question, and people want you to bring your unique expertise to the table. I think that's one way to look at it. And another way to look at it is that as scientists, we love solving problems. So to me, the fact that we have one more constraint, which is that I not only need to do amazing research, but I really need to crack this very important question, not just any questions, but this specific one, because that's stopping us from developing medicine. As a scientist, at least for me, I relished that challenge. I was like, okay, now you're giving me another constraint that I have to tackle. Bring it on. Like, let me show you that I can do that. So sure, maybe for someone who's really free spirited or love to chase where their mind takes them, that might be a constraint that they, let's say, don't enjoy, which is mm-hmm. totally respectable. But for many more scientists out there, I don't think that limits your imagination or your creativity or your scientific rigor as a scientist at all. If anything, that makes your work even more interesting because now you have this additional challenge you have to tackle. So I just hope that people can maybe demystify and doesn't feel like research in industry setting is this really stifled environment. Not at all. We have all kinds of cutting edge research going on, and I get to interact with scientists in totally different disciplines, and even clinicians, even non-scientists, to learn about what it takes to develop a medicine. To me, that's way more knowledge and freedom I would have had access to as a postdoc, for example, in an academic lab. At the same time, I do get that that comes with additional challenges as well, but I just hope that maybe people can reframe their thinking around this a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think we don't even have that complete freedom in academia either. Like, you need funding, you need, you have a research group, you have specific tools. Like, I think that freedom is overestimated probably as well.
Yeah, true.
And I also agree that once you have boundaries, then it's sometimes that's the boundaries bring in the innovation and the really sort of creative thinking that sort of helps you solve a specific problem. And I think it's amazing that there are companies that are focused on that and encourage that creative thinking to solve those problems, because these are really big and important problems to solve. Yeah. I think we should wrap up. So it's been really wonderful to know you and to hear your story. I think it really shows how, you know, creativity and courage and research skills and skills that you gain along the way sort of open doors, and not being afraid to try those out. I wonder if being so sort of creative and sort of following that passion to interior decoration, I wonder, have you ever thought about, you know, moving maybe a step towards entrepreneurship in scientific routes? Sort of, is that made you more comfortable there as well to explore that option?
I love that question, because I frankly haven't thought of that before. I would say, I don't know yet. Maybe.
Like, well, you're young enough. You can, there's time.
Now you're making me think about it. I would say, I hope that I would be having even more courage that perhaps one day, if opportunity presents, I will be stepping up to the plate. Yeah, we'll see.
That's great. That's great. It's a great answer. Well, thank you. We'll list a link to every to your website and to everything you'd like to sort of include for our listeners. Please join our Macademia group on Facebook, if you are on Facebook, to sort of continue the discussion. And thank you for your time. It was really a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. And thanks to everyone for listening.